everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, engineering and producing our show, the River of Rain, Tom, the atmospheric river, continues in California. It'll be interesting tomorrow when we bring in Dr. Guido, our resident climate scientist from the U of A, to see if this is going to impact the drought. I mean, this is the most rain they've had over there since 1982.
Yes, and it's not just one river. It's a river after river after river. I think we're seeing as many as, what, four maybe by now?
Four. Or
the next one may be the fourth?
Four and maybe two more. So it just keeps going. Today is Wednesday. It's the 11th of January, 2023. Our program broadcasts from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio within the campus of Bustos Media Tucson. Our radio station is KVOI. Think of K-Voice 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk worldwide, live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we also have now 12 full years, pretty much every show we have done over the past 12 years, conveniently archived for you on my website. When we do our telephone interviews, which we will do at the bottom of the hour, the live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's welcome now back to the show Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, Superintendent, Tucson Unified School District. Dr. Trujillo, did you have a nice holiday season?
I did. Happy New Year to you, Bill. It's always great to be back here at the show. I hope your 2023 is off to a great start.
Yeah, we're keeping our fingers crossed that this will be a great year. We do have a new school superintendent. He's very familiar to you and educators, and it's Tom Horn. Tom was sworn in this week, or maybe officially last week. But anyway, his office has put out a news release approving nearly 25,000 overdue ESA requests from parents. This is the state's Empowerment Scholarship Accounts program. So what is this more than $22 million in delayed payments made to schools and educators? What does that mean to Tucson Unified?
Well, what it means, Bill, is we've already identified close to 800 students that live inside of TUSD's attendance boundaries that already accept these vouchers. We know that many of these students have been attending private schools for many years. So these dollars, from at least TUSD's perspective, aren't necessarily reaching the struggling families that wish to leave a traditional public school and go to a private tuition-charging school. The bulk of TUSD students that live in our zone have actually been going to private schools for a number of years and can afford the tuition, and they're just collecting the $5,000 or $7,000. But that's not to say that we don't have a couple of hundred students within that 800 that are actually leaving our schools and taking advantage of this opportunity that's very lightly monitored, extremely unstructured, and lacks a lot of accountability in terms of the quality of learning that students are receiving. This is probably going to add to those numbers, and that's concerning.
Well, we've talked about this before. The oversight is really lacking with this program, with the ESAs. So we have now a governor who is very education friendly, as she pointed out in her State of the State address. I wonder if this will get a second look now from the legislature, which is still controlled by the Republicans. So you wonder, will ESAs take be under the microscope?
Well, I can tell you I'm excited about the governor's inaugural address. I think that she's saying all the right things.
Yeah,
I do believe
teacher
she's sincere.
Retention, all the issues.
Absolutely.
Came up. The money that needs to be paid out, I always forget the exact name of it, by March.
Results-based funding.
Results-based funding, that unless the districts get this money in March, well, it's a problem.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm appreciative of her sincerity and her heart and her passion for education, but I'm also a realist, Bill, and I know that there is a very real obstacle in this legislature in getting not a governor-friendly education budget, but actually getting a legislature friendly education budget. And that's going to be a challenge due to a lot of the animosity that we've seen from a significant amount of legislators towards public education.
And those lawmakers stood up and some walked out and some turned their back to the governor during the speech.
Yeah, and that's the concern, that there's still the perception in these circles that public schools are failing schools, bent on indoctrinating students and bent on undercutting parent values in the home and wasting money. And I'm not sure that that's going to turn around in one legislative session.
We're losing some COVID money. Is that true for your budget?
Yes. The COVID era ESSER dollars, and for those of you in the listening public, that is monies, those are monies we've received through the Elementary and Secondary Schools Economic Recovery Fund as part of the American Rescue Plan, funded to support schools through COVID. Those dollars run dry at the end of the 23-24 school year, which means that we're going to have some decisions to make around some positions that will no longer be covered by these dollars. And obviously, every position matters, but the nature of a short-term grant sets you up at the very beginning to understand that that funding source is not going to be around forever. And when it goes away, you're going to have to make some difficult decisions.
Budget year 22-23, is that what you said?
So we have a lot of positions that are covered for the remainder of this year and actually all the way through the end of next year. But COVID dollars run dry indefinitely and permanently on June 30th, 2024. Now, we do have some positions that the governing board has opted not to fund at the conclusion of this school year, 22-23. And those are positions that we're going to be working with schools to see if we can get funded through some alternative funding sources.
You have a new board composition. The board met in its entirety. The first meeting was last night. How did it go?
First meeting last night. Congratulations to Dr. Ravi Shah. He's been elected as the governing board president. And congratulations to new governing board member Val Romero, who was elected as the board's clerk last night. They'll serve a 12-month term. We're looking forward to a leadership working session on January 31st, where the public will be able to see our governing board engage in some team-building activities. We're going to have a workshop from ASBA on best practices for school board governance.
This is open to the public?
This is open to the public, yeah. This will be a public meeting.
So it's not one of these retreats that's just closed-door retreat?
It's an open-door retreat, yeah. It's fully accessible to the public in an open meeting.
What is your venue for this?
We'll be at the Duffy Multipurpose Center, where we usually have our meetings.
So the board made these decisions on leadership roles. What else did they decide for this new year?
Well, they're going to have some big decisions coming up. And I think that the immediate challenges of the board, I think they're going to be in three specific areas. Number one, what to do about healthcare in the district. Our district has prided itself in the last 3 or 4 years of protecting our employees from increases brought on by the rising cost of healthcare. We've been able to protect our employees from absorbing those deductions in their paychecks around medical, dental, and vision. Working with our benefits provider, shortly before the election, we're informed that the projected increase to employee benefits is going to be around 10%, which could be...
That's a huge hit.
It's a huge hit. It's going to be over $1 million hit to our budget. So our board, they're going to be challenged in terms of how do we continue to protect our employees from those costs? What are we going to be able to do to prevent those costs from passing on to the employees?
Yeah, because it's a selling point.
Yeah, it's
somebody
a
comes
point.
To work, they want good health benefits.
And you don't want to see increased deductions coming out of your paycheck every time that those healthcare costs increase. So that's going to be challenge number one, I think. Challenge number two is going to be what to do about TUSD middle schools. Middle schools have been an increasing challenge in the district. Our parents have sent us messages with their feet as we've struggled to enroll at the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade level. There's a lot going on at our middle schools that need to be addressed. There's the argument that maybe a model where we have 6th grade embedded at the elementaries for an additional year.
Well, that's the way it was when I was growing up a million years ago. Yeah. Junior high school was always 7th and 8th grade.
The notion that maybe 6th grade may be too early to transition to a significantly larger learning environment with triple the amount of students,
sure,
and triple the amount of teachers that I see every day might be a little bit too much. And so I think that when you look at the TUSD landscape, we are strong in K-5. Mm-hmm. We win the enrollment battle in most sectors of the district at K-5. We start losing kids after that fifth grade year, and we don't recover them until the high school years. So I think this board is going to be challenged in terms of what it wants to do for middle school reform. That's going to involve some changes. It's going to involve an investment in money and in staffing, and also being able to embrace change in terms of what do best practices say around the nation and around the state with regard to high-quality middle school instruction. Does that look like a K-6? Does it look like smaller 7-8 middle schools? Or does it look like a traditional K-8 model?
Would you have the facility to put the students in the 6th grade into the middle elementary schools?
We do in certain... There are specific areas of the district where K-5 schools are light on enrollment. They do have the extra classroom space where families would be more than happy to have their kids who have been attending there for 5 years stick around another year.
Sure.
And maybe have that additional year of preparedness before you go into a middle school environment.
Well, makes sense to me anyway, because that's kind of the background I came from. All right, there was a third item on the agenda, and we are up against the break. Do you want to save that for after the break?
We can certainly save that for after the break.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right, let's talk right now, Dr. Trujillo, about our favorite bakery here in town. That's Mona's Danish Bakery. You know how much we love Mona's.
Absolutely. And there is never a bad time to stop by Mona's and get yourself a fresh baked, delicious blueberry crinkle.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a delicacy at any point in the day.
How about a cup of coffee to go with it?
And you take that coffee. My preference is first thing in the morning, but there's never a bad time for a coffee break.
Mona's Danish Bakery is home of the Danish Kringle. They're open right now for lunch, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. And if I was right there right now for lunch, I'd do the hot chicken sandwich on that wonderful toasted rustic bread. Make a great lunch. They open at 6:30 Tuesday through Saturday morning, 7 o'clock. Sunday morning, they are taking now Monday off. Their website beautifully showing all of the menu items and articulating what is on the menu, monasdanishbakery.com. All right, we'll take a break right here. More with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, superintendent at Tucson Unified. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you interested in sailing on an all-inclusive luxury cruise, trekking on an expedition adventure, or relaxing on a tropical beach? Then join us on February 26th at the Hilton El Conquistador as Bon Voyage Travel hosts our free travel showcase. Over 35 representatives from the world's best travel brands will be on hand to help you discover all the world has to offer. The Bon Voyage Travel Showcase, February 26th. Be sure to visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We continue now our conversation with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, the superintendent at Tucson Unified. He was talking about articulating the major issues that this new board, which had their first meeting together, the newly constituted TUSD governing board. Dr. Trujillo pointed out health care benefits is going to be a huge issue. Middle school reform. What's the third item, Dr. Trujillo?
The other item is going to be a revision to our student disciplinary code of conduct. And one of the major challenges in Tucson Unified, we've been under court supervision for so many years, 40 years to be exact. And now in this first year where the district is fully free of court supervision and fully autonomous and able to make its own decisions and its own policies, we have to address some of the longstanding concerns that classroom teachers and site administrators and quite frankly parents have had about a student code of conduct that has been perceived in some instances and actual in others to be a little bit too loose in terms of allowing teachers and administrators to address student disruptions and misbehavior that have presented a real obstacle to classroom teachers and, quite frankly, have been a factor that's been cited by a lot of teachers in their decisions to leave the district. So teachers need to feel supported. They need to feel in control of their classroom. That's not to say we're about throwing kids out of school or kicking kids out. But I think that we need to come back more to the center with regard to student discipline, where accountability and responsibility are not bad things when students make bad decisions in the classroom. Supporting teachers and their need and their right to control their classrooms and secure their classroom environments without disruptions, we've got to make that a focal point of our work in the teacher retention battle, and that's going to be a big challenge for the board this year. We know we have advocates on both sides of that issue that will be given opportunities to engage in the process. And I'll say that the teacher shortage and the employee labor shortage always is going to be a challenge. And inside of that is going to be special education. And our governing board is going to be challenged to think outside the box in terms of how they're going to address the special education teacher shortage. The segment of TUSD's population that identifies as special education and has been identified as students with disabilities is swelling to just about 7,000 and is growing each and every day. We have the largest special education student with disability population in Southern Arizona, one of the largest in the state. But our staffing is continuing to shrink due to vacancies, due to retirements, resignations.
Boy, that's a real challenge.
It's
how do you service these young men and women?
Mm. And we're talking about students with not only learning disabilities and intellectual challenges. We've got students that are also dealing with emotional disabilities that need actual clinical attention from psychologists and social workers. We're talking about students that struggle with sight and hearing and autism. So when you don't have the practitioners that you need to serve those students, it becomes increasingly challenging for the general education classroom teacher in school to meet those needs. And your existing special education teachers see their class sizes swell.
Wow.
And it becomes harder to keep them in the system. So we're going to have a governing board that's going to have to take that on and look at this issue in a wholesale way from all sides to see what we can do outside the box to make our district a premier destination for special educators.
When was the COC, the Code of Conduct, last revised?
It was last revised 2018. We were, of course, still under court supervision. The administration pushed for harder consequences for things like fights, classroom disruptions, acts of vandalism, and at that time we just had a court that didn't see it that way. And opted for more lenient consequences for those types of disruptions. So right out of the gate, we're going to be looking for a little bit more in terms of tougher consequences for those types of disruptions occurring, especially in the classroom. And now we're going to have the opportunity to do that.
So the revision would then be widely publicized within the district. So everybody knows, the students know, the teachers know, this is our code of conduct.
Absolutely. And it's one of those things that we've got to find the sweet spot between our commitment to keep kids in school and to deal with problematic behaviors in a way that don't burden society and take advantage of the resources in school to change student behavior. So the sweet spot between that obligation and the obligation and commitment we have to clean, safe classrooms for everybody, especially our teachers and every kid in the room. And you can't have students being repetitively disruptive inside of the classroom and not have it impact the learning of everybody else. You can't have fights breaking out in common areas and then having the students show up the next day as if nothing happened. So there has to be a balance. And we're not saying that two kids getting in a fight in the lunchroom means that they're expelled from the district. We're not going to go to the other extreme, but we do have to secure the environment and we have to send the message to the student body that violence is never an option. Violence is never a choice that we are going to tolerate. And there has to be a consequence that sends a message to the student body that if you engage in this behavior, there will be some tougher consequences.
And the parents have to be on board and understand they cannot show up at the district if there's been a fight and possibly even get involved in more more violence.
Absolutely. And I do think now with a lot of reflection and a lot of clarity, a lot of these policy gaps have contributed to some fairly large-scale disruptions. The notorious May 2nd incident at Tucson High, that's a perfect example of some previous behaviors with those students involved that if we had tougher consequences in some of those previous disciplinary incidents, maybe May 2nd wouldn't have happened.
How many were involved when all was said and done in the now notorious May 2nd incident?
I think we had to end up doing discipline and a range of disciplinary consequences ranging from expulsion to short-term suspensions to long-term suspensions. I think it was about 12 students.
Mm. Well, you've certainly articulated this board has so much now on their plates. Are you okay with, I know there was a shortage in the area of enough support personnel, the people, the bus drivers that get our young people to and from the district. How did that all shake out?
You know, we've, to use an expression, we fired all our bullets, Bill. We've made our bus drivers are the highest paid in Pima County. They make over $18 an hour.
Fully licensed.
Fully licensed. We'll train you. We'll pay for your training and your certificate and your license. So we're just now kind of watching on a week-by-week basis to see how that's reverberated across the community. We have seen an uptick in applications, which is great, but we're still quite a ways away from having the bus drivers that we need to open up school in a way that allows all of those neighborhood bus stops to be up and running again.
Are you back to a normal school calendar for the spring?
We are. We are.
Will there be a break?
There'll be a break. We've got
Do you still do a rodeo break? Or?
We do rodeo break.
Wow.
Absolutely.
The third
week of February, we're looking forward to that. With third week of March will be the spring break. Mm-hmm. And of course, we observe Dr. Martin Luther King Day coming up this Monday.
Okay. Dr. Trujillo, good to see you. We're trying to work some things out so you'll be here in mid-February. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. It's always a pleasure.
All right, we're going to take a break right here, and after CBS Network News, we'll hear from the Buckmaster Show sponsors, and then we'll hear from Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham on our live line. But right now, let's take a break. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Big shout out to Green Things. They had a great holiday season, 3384 East River Road. They are open daily in their 53rd year of business. The website is greenthingsaz.com and their sister business, zocalovillage.com. All that great merchandise, much of it beautifully handcrafted, like some of the dining room sets from Mexico. beautiful items at Zocalo Village. Let's go now on the live line to Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham. Paul, how are you, and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, Bill. Great to talk to you after the holiday.
Did you have a nice holiday?
Wonderful. I took my kids to L.A. They got to stay at Knott's Berry Farm. They had a wonderful time. I saw all my family members, both of my sisters and all my nieces and nephews came into town. It was a great family event.
How about this water main break? Is all that taken care of now?
Hopefully by the end of the month, we'll have the intersection 100%. Right now, 83% of the intersection is operating. We still don't have northbound. The water main break occurred about 25 feet below the substrate. It was a 24-inch, what's called a special piece of a 24-inch main, where the pipe transitions from 24 inches to 18 inches and then to 16 inches. And in those special pieces, sometimes you'll have a microscopic leak, and that microscopic leak can come from disturbance from wildlife. It can come from a heavy load going over it. It can come from an ice pocket or an air pocket. It can come from a seismic anomaly in Pomona, California. It can cause this little microscopic piece, and it can compound over time, and after a few years you get a big break. You really can't really predict these. This pipe was installed in 1972. It had some work done in the 90s and 2000s, so we don't really know exactly what happened, but it happens. And we were able to restore water service to everybody in the area within about 72 to 96 hours after the main break. And then we were able to open the intersection within 2 weeks, 83%, except for the northbound function. We laid in the final pieces of replacing the main and the main down the line this week. We backfilled the hole yesterday. We have to let the dirt set. We'll then put down something called soil cement. When we put down that soil cement, it becomes the new substrate of where the pavement will go. We have to allow that to cure for about 48 hours, and then we begin the paving process. So hopefully we'll be ready to go weekend of January 20th, 21st, 22nd, 23rd. I've always said by the end of the month, but I was really happy with a few things. Number one is we were able to get the southbound function open and fire up the intersection about 2 weeks to 3 weeks earlier than I expected, and we were able to restore water service right away. So we've had crews working double shifts almost the entire their time. Big shout out to Hunter Contracting. Big shout out to Tucson Asphalt, who completed the southbound cold portion in like 2 days, and they did it right before the rain started. So I think we've handled it pretty well. My office has been updating our social media practically on a daily basis. Obviously, there's a few days we missed it, but pretty much on a daily basis to let people know what's going on. I know it's a bummer, but hey, man. We've got to just, all we can do is work with what we got and go as fast as we can, but do it right and do it so that the future damage is minimal. So that's kind of my spiel on it. Obviously, I've really tried to be on top of this.
What is the intersection again? Haven't mentioned that.
Oh, Speedway and Kolb. Speedway and Kolb. Everybody in Ward 2 knows because, man, it has disrupted traffic significantly.
Well, speaking of water, you probably saw the front page article in the Star today that the Arizona Water Director says he's not ready to say which urban areas his office will next determine lacks enough water for the new housing growth. I think they were pinpointing Buckeye, Arizona, but he didn't rule out that Pima County. This is a huge issue, this water, which could turn out to be a water scarcity issue. It is a water scarcity issue. Yeah.
Bill, I've been coming on your show for a decade, and I try to touch on water all the time. I remember I used to say on cue, if we don't have water, we don't have a Tucson. So we've tried to be very good stewards of our water future. I feel that the city of Tucson itself has a significant, an upper hand on, Wheeling rights, on paper water rights, on wet water rights, on wet water storage. We have built back our infrastructure and our ability to store clear and clean water just nonstop for the last decade. And as a result, I wouldn't trade positions with anybody in Arizona, with any town in Arizona, with where we are water-wise right now. That being said, that doesn't mean we can just say, okay, well, we got it and rest on our laurels. We have to continue to be good stewards. We have to continue to be trailblazers in conservation. We have to continue to find new technologies, and we have to continue to work to maximize the number of renewable water resources we have.
Well, that's Tucson, but I guess some of the surrounding areas may not have as good a picture, right?
I mean, well, yeah, I mean, we have rights as of today, and that's obviously changing it's changing month to month, but we have rights of 144,000 acre feet of water from the Colorado. We're obviously going to take less of it because we don't need it. We only need to wheel about 120,000 to 127,000 acre feet a year. Of that, we have 30,000 and change acre feet of renewable water that we have rights to. And we're probably going to have to, right now we've renewed that water into the cleanest you can get without it being considered potable. We probably need to get it to be wheeled potable. The same thing that they've done in Orange County. I think there's some other things we can do as far as some water runoff capture and stormwater capture and clean that we can do that we probably haven't done in the past. But we've been very good about conservation, and we've been very good about water storage and recharge. So we've done some really good cutting-edge things there. Those are the next two steps that we can do. And ultimately, we should be in a position where, if we're careful enough, that we won't – I like to call it water neutrality. In other words, the Sonoran Desert Basin, the Tucson Basin, the portion of the Sonoran Desert naturally recharges so many acre feet a year – and we only want to be drawing that much and capturing the rest to meet our water needs. I think we can, we may not be able to get there perfectly someday, but we'll definitely be there where a substantial portion of the water we use can be done in that community. I think there are some places in Pima County that we'll probably be ultimately collaborating with and figuring out how to leverage what kind of paper water credits and what kind of storage and recharge water efforts we're doing, and we'll help them along. We're going to be good partners, and we've been good stewards, so we're going to continue to do that. We're not going to just ignore it. But the bottom line is that if you're a community planner and you decide you're going to build 25,000 homes all of a sudden and you have no water source, then are you really making a good plan? And that's where I push back a little bit on some of those discussions.
Are you as angry as the vice mayor, Steve Kasachek, and Councilman Kevin Dahl about this desalinization proposal?
Well, I just think it. I think it's a little. I think it's a little premature. I think it's a little. I don't think that we. What I don't like is that we've done all this stuff to make water happen, and we Tucson Water is the largest provider of the water in the region, and we didn't even get a study session item on it. I mean, at least come and talk to the council and let us know what's going on. And so that was kind of an interesting dynamic. But, you know, a lot of this stuff isn't personal. People are always just trying to make the best decisions right in front of them. We've talked about long-term plans about the Sea of Cortez. That's nothing new. But, you know, the feasibility and the realisticness of how we do it and why we do it has to be discussed as well.
All right, we're going to pause right here. Stick around, Councilman Paul Cunningham. We'll take a break right here. Be back midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show on January 11th, 2023. Be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Looks like a nice weekend coming up here in Tucson and really over the Southwest, including Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. I think Tucson is going to be pushing upper 70s, very spring-like weather. And then over in Silver City, looks like mid-60s. Great weather to get out and take a road trip, only about a three-hour drive, to visit our friends in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. They are ready to welcome with open arms all of our Buckmaster Show Tucson, Southern Arizona listeners. The first stop, I always suggest, check out their website, Southwest New Mexico, spelled out, southwestnewmexico.org. You'll have plenty of information there about things to do, places to stay, and great places to dine as well. Let's continue now on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, our conversation with Paul Cunningham, Tucson City Councilman. Councilman, I was really, really surprised when I saw this article. It was published in the Star on January 7th on Saturday's edition. It was a piece out of the Arizona Republic that Arizona now has one of the worst homelessness crises in the United States, according to new federal information. 1% is the growth rate nationwide in homelessness, but here in Arizona, the jump was 23% in the homeless population.
Yeah, it's a really alarming statistic. I think a lot of different factors play into that, including weather, including proximities and location. I think there's just a lot of different factors that play into that. But what I'll say is this. I think that every single city around the country is having a significant issue with homelessness, and in Arizona as well. And I think the other piece that we're having is that part of it's a fentanyl crisis, part of it's a housing crisis, part of it's a displacement crisis, some of it's some mental health issues that have kind of been going on this for a long time. I'd say right now, there are things you can do to limit the problem being exacerbated. And there are just different programs and things you can run. One of the things that we don't have robustly yet that we really could use here is a mandated shelter for diversion. In other words, if you stay in shelter, your case is dismissed. I don't think we have that program kind of in place yet. We're working on it. I'd love to see a program like that. I'd also like to see us have like a full continuum where we have, you know, we have some folks that are right now are unsheltered, and they really don't need to go through an entire program. They just kind of need a couple breaks to break their way. They're holding down a job. They're actually earning income. And they're in situations that have hope, and they just need a couple, or just a boost forward. So we've got to have something that helps them. And then there's other folks that it's a mental health issue and they're not getting proper services, or they probably haven't had their medications reviewed in a long time, and we need help for them. And we have people that have some addiction issues. And we that's a different set of issues, and sometimes those go hand in hand with mental health issues, and we need help for them. And we have some folks that are in a situation where they're really working criminally, and some of their issues are very criminogenic, and we probably have to have a more robust plan for them. But when you get into it and you really start unpeeling the layers, you realize it's a very, very complex problem. So I'd say right now we have to have a continuum that allows for mandated shelter, that allows for structured like congregant shelter with low barrier. Then we've got to have a shelter that allows high barrier and has some program. And then we have like a boosting shelter and a transitional shelter that gets you into your own permanency plan. And then we also have to have the Alamo. And the Alamo is that last thing after we've worked every other program and found a, and that's for the person that where we're continuing to have problems and they're just not engaging. But not only are not engaging, they are continuing to participate in what we'd consider criminogenic or nefarious activities. And that's like an unsheltered unit that would be considered incarceration. And look, a lot of people will misconstrue that and say that we want to lock up homeless people. That isn't the case. It's just that we need people to meet us where they are. And we go through an entire process and we still can't get anything done and we're still having issues. There has to be some last, you know, the last stand so we have to have that kind of continuum. And the task to get that type of continuum really uniformed and set up requires a collaboration of some 25 to 35 agencies. My office has put together a plan that kind of introduces the idea of just getting people to the table and seeing, hey, this is what we, because a lot of the programs and continuums we kind of have piecemeal, we just haven't lined them all up. We haven't really put the alignment in. And so I think we can get there. I think that will definitely relax some of the exacerbations we're experiencing. Again, I don't know here in Pima County how, we're very much playing catch up right now. I think the other thing we really need is a little more flexibility on some of the housing startup programs we're doing, where we have some federal money, we have some different grants and stuff to help people get homes. And we're just having, like, you're not allowed to use two vouchers in one household, even though it would be two adults roommating up and both having a voucher. You've got some rules that kind of precludes that. And I'd like to see some of those change. So I think our team's working really hard to kind of make the continuum work and then have some of the programs a little more user-friendly. And I think that will definitely reduce some of our exacerbations. I will say this, though. This isn't just a Pima County problem. Remember that a significant of that number remember the biggest boom in our state was actually in Maricopa County, which drove some of those numbers. And I think, I mean, I don't want to make excuses or point names, but so often folks ask me why we're not more like Phoenix. And I'm thinking, well, sometimes it may not pay off that way.
Yeah. There are 375 Arizona residents with an annual income of $25,000 or less. That means they can afford to pay only about $625 per month for rent and utilities without being cost burdened, according to the department, Arizona State Department of Housing. There are probably zero apartments available at that level, Paul Cunningham.
Well, it's been up and on. I mean, it was really high this summer. We've seen a little bit reduction. There's a few more available, but again, it's not. We're not flush with units available at a low cost. That's definitely a certainty. And the market kind of drives that. And then you've got to just roll with the punches and kind of just do your best to find people's places. Look, I try to engage folks every day. I work hand in hand with our team to try to find people a place to stay, a place to start. And, you know, one thing that we have is that we've got to remember that if you see someone who's homeless, who's down and out, who's having a rough time, they are that way today. And we should always be trying to strive to say, where are they going to be tomorrow or the next day? And I'd like to do that. I think everybody in their family has had a family member or a friend or a friend of a friend that has either suffered the disease of addiction or have some mental health issues or have some situations where they're down and out and unsheltered, and they want to find places to help them and find ways to help them. So I urge people to be sympathetic. A lot of times it's very hard to, when you see a group of people kind of just not even having any regard for, you know, the community at all. And that can be very frustrating, or you have one or two people who are not necessarily the norm operating some type of activity that can be considered criminal. And so all of a sudden we pin some of the folks that are kind of caught in the crosshairs on them. So I think we've just got to continue to work with people one case at a time, one person at a time. And, you know, if you've got somebody who needs help, or you've got someone who's trying, and when I say trying, they're really trying to make it work, call my office and we'll try to meet them where they are too. And then that's what I've told the community from day one, and that's what we've been doing.
I've got less than a minute with you, but people, especially business owners, very, very frustrated about this issue.
Oh, absolutely. It's not an easy situation. It's not, you know, and it's weird because we've got the same type of criminal activity we've had on and off. It's kind of changed. Like when I first got into office, we had a string of residential burglaries. Right now we were really high bike theft when I first got into office. I mean, gee whiz, McKillikers, we couldn't even have a day without having 5, 6, 7 bikes stolen and reported stolen in Tucson. Now we're in catalytic converters. We've got people running around cutting catalytic converters out of cars. It seems to be a bit, it's becoming a problem. Again, if you're cutting a catalytic converter, some of the things we're seeing are, these are people with a vehicle, they're able to cut it out, they're using a Sawzall, and they're getting on their way, and then they have some type of operation to fence the materials. That, to me, is not someone who's living in a tent. I think that's something else. So I think some of these criminal activities and some of these homeless nuisance activities are different things, and we've really got to be able to delineate them.
All right. Councilman Cunningham, hope the new year is off to a good start for you. Stay well.
Can I make one announcement, Bill?
Yeah, real quickly.
Can I make one announcement?
Yes.
Everybody, 12:30, Fort Lowell Park this Friday. We're having our ribbon cutting. We got a new playground out there. Really proud of it. My team, thanks to Ward 2 and Tucson Parks for working really hard to get that done.
It's Friday?
Yep.
Okay. Fort Lowell Park. Thank you very much, Paul Cunningham. Have a great day.
Thanks, Bill. Have a great day.
The Buckmaster Show. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.